I'm not coming back to Claire Randall on the topic of misandry. I look forward to the introduction of that topic on another occasion. But I am coming back to Claire on the matter of misogyny. And I detected in Claire Randall's audiobook and I might be wrong about this, but a certain defensiveness vis-a-vis her position. And that she somehow regarded her position as extreme when she laid out her case that essentially a woman is entitled to say no at any point in a sexual encounter, and that men ought to be held accountable for their actions, even if they, at the last minute, find themselves being turned down, if you like, by the woman. So no matter how provocatively or how attractively, we'll say, the woman has behaved up until that point, she is entitled to say no, and the man is expected, or ought to be expected, to comply with no. Let me make clear, I entirely and utterly agree with everything that Claire Randall said in her audio boo, and I don't regard her position as extreme at all. I regard her position as normal common sense and respectful of all parties, respectful of men as well as of women. But I don't mean but. I mean, Claire made a point that I'd never thought of before in support of her argument. She said, well, she referred to burglaries and said, you know, people are not asked to account for their burglaries the same way as they are asked to justify, as women are asked to justify, how they were dressed. And I started to think about this and I thought, yes, now if you leave your house with all your, let's say you have very attractive looking hi-fi in your house, and you leave it on display, if you like, through an open window, and your house is locked. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to be very careful here. I'm negotiating in traffic, and I'm trying to get into the right-hand lane from a left-hand lane. But to go back to the point about the house, if you leave your house visible so you can look in and you can see your gold tiara or your best golf clubs in the front room of the house, and the house is locked, or indeed even if the house is open, and somebody walks in and steals everything out of your house, it's not a mitigation in court to say to the justice, to the judge, my lord, if he had closed the windows, if he had only closed the curtains in the house, I wouldn't have been so enticed, and I would have been able to hold myself back from raiding the house. In other words, if we treat the house, and this is an absurd analogy, right? And I'm aware how absurd it is, by the way. But I think absurdity is sometimes helpful. If we treat the house as if it was a woman, we don't engage in a series of questions about, you know, whether you enticed the burglars by having too attractive a car in your driveway, or even if you accidentally were to leave your keys in the car and somebody comes along and drives it off. That isn't a mitigation against your culpability for driving off somebody else's car. So why should the way a woman dresses be ever regarded as a mitigating factor in assessing the extent of culpability. Why should it matter a hoot? A woman is entitled to dress any way she likes, and by right ought to be able to walk down the street naked without having anybody assault her. Ought to be able to engage in sexually attracting behavior. And a man should be aware that if he interprets sexually attractive behavior as entitling him to do anything, he's bonkers, and that he will be held accountable for everything. After all, if a man were to beat up a woman, you know, hit her and kick her in the face and everything while she's dressed provocatively or has behaved provocatively, I very much doubt that that would be used in mitigation in a court effectively. So why should it when rape is involved? In that, you know, rape is a form of assault. Obviously it's a form of assault. It's gross bodily harm, isn't it? Gross bodily harm, it is. And in some cases, I mean, you know, I haven't been raped, but if I imagine what it would be like to be raped, I imagine that it would be worse than getting a physical assault. I just cannot imagine how horrible it would be to be raped. And I can imagine much more easily how horrible it would be to, you know, get a kick in the face and end up in hospital with a broken nose and my eye smashed in. I can imagine what that's like, and I can imagine it without feeling extraordinarily squeamish. But as soon as it comes around to thinking about what I'd feel like if I was raped, I shudder. So, right, this is an important issue, I think, in relation to misogyny, because even though we talk about rape here, or I'm talking about rape here, if the whole of our culture is founded upon a disrespectful view of women, which objectifies them to the point where women are regarded as a thing that can be interfered with in certain circumstances by any way a man wants to interfere, or almost any way. That's a kind of basic security thing in society. If you're insecure about your safety sexually, you're insecure about your, you know, most precious personal possession, your right to open yourself up to another person. If you're insecure about that, then there is a fundamental weakness in your foundation and your foundation position in society. And it's hard for me to move away from the question of rape, because until we collectively conspire or collaborate to change the whole culture connected with rape, then I think we're going to have a fundamental weakness in our society, which is going to operate to the obvious disadvantage of women, and the implications are profound. They affect, you know, all decision making in in key areas. Okay, I'm kind of beginning to flounder in terms of what else I can say, but I just want to thank Claire Randall and to encourage her to be as open as and free with her views, and not to feel that, I mean, she has allies out here. You know, I'm one example of her ally, and I don't think I'm, you know, a unique person. Or, and in fact, we don't need to persuade everybody about this. We just need to persuade a certain number of people about this, and we can change the culture, even if it is a long struggle. Thanks very much for listening to this. And thank you to Bernie Goldbach for starting off the first part of the first discussion. And, you know, long may we continue with this topic.